Welcome to the Northridge Vineyard podcast. We're a real community of people who are passionate about pursuing God and growing in our relationship with Him. We hope you enjoy this message. For more information and other resources, please visit northridge.org.au.
So this morning, our question is, why read Exodus? Why read Exodus? So you may be sitting there thinking, Exodus? Really? Why? Can't we just read the New Testament? I know there are some people who, like, I'm a gospel person, and I that's what I like reading. And the Old Testament is just, I mean, you could say, why read Exodus? Like, it's an ancient Near Eastern story, right? It was maybe written around 2,500 years ago. It's a different culture, different part of the world. Different values? Like, what relevance would that story have for my life or our community? Like, isn't it just historical done? It's a good question. I hear you. If that's your question, good question. Why Exodus? I mean, isn't that the bit where God tells the ground to swallow up all those people? Isn't that it? Oh, well, it's not. It's in Numbers. But, you know, like, people... there's this whole killing thing going on. Like, do we really need to talk about that? And is that the same God as the New Testament God? Because it doesn't look like it's the same God. So why would we even bother sort of wrestling with those kind of questions? I don't want to think about that. Maybe that's you. And your question's a good one. It's a good question. Maybe you're wondering, hey, isn't Exodus that bit where there's all that really, really long instruction on about that temple, that tent temple thing? Isn't that it? And about all those animal sacrifices and, I mean, haven't we done that? Like, we don't meet in a tent. We don't sacrifice animals, so why talk about that anymore? Maybe that's your question. It's a good question. Or maybe you go, actually, Exodus, you know, you have no idea how long I've been in church. I mean, I know these stories backwards and forwards. And actually, I've seen the movies. They've made movies, okay? You don't need to talk about it. Like, it's done. Exodus is done. I'm over Exodus, actually. Thank you. That might be you as well. I'm sorry. That's you. Too bad. But I think they're all questions, and you probably have some other questions rattling around your head. About why you would bother reading Exodus. But I actually think that reading Exodus for us as a community at this point is actually really helpful. And this morning, I just want to put before you three reasons why I reckon it's really helpful. And the first reason has to do with vertigo. So, has anyone here suffered from vertigo at any point? Yeah? No? Never had it? So you've never got off a ride at Luna Park and gone, ooh, never done that? No? No? You guys are blessed. Yeah, Joe, you've gotten off a ride and... have you ever been concussed and had the world spinning? No? Okay, so it's just me. Is it just me and Sarah then? Sarah has Meniere's disease, which is... it's vertigo on a grand scale. In the last couple of years, I've had these infections in your... they're vestibular infections. So you know how you've got your inner ear, those little bones that do things, right? When they get infected, those little bones can sort of skew out and you feel like everything is just tilting and weird and your head's just spinning and it's a really, really disconcerting feeling because you're going along, right? It's like, yep, no, I'm fine. The world's as it should be. And then suddenly... You feel it just begin to sort of tip. And all I want to do in that moment, because I start to spin, is just find something solid. And usually I want to head straight for the bed. And when I lie down on the bed, it's like my arms feel solid, my legs, back is solid. And then it doesn't entirely stop spinning, but you close your eyes and it sort of, it doesn't feel like everything's spinning. It's just, I found something solid, I can rest. A decade or so ago, there was this Polish sociologist called, I'm going to pronounce his don't quote me on this, but I think his name is Zygmunt Bauman. Anyone heard of Zygmunt Bauman? Polish sociologist. He's an old guy now, but he was looking around at what was happening in the world, and he made this observation about this. Okay, so he said this. Postmodernity means this is the time we live in now, you know. Postmodernity means the exhilarating freedom to pursue anything, yet mind-boggling uncertainty as to what is worth pursuing and in the name of what one should pursue it. Do you want to read it again? Or you got it? Okay. Postmodernity means the exhilarating freedom to pursue anything, yet mind-boggling uncertainty as to what is worth pursuing and in the name of what one should pursue it. So as he mused over that, right, he's looking at these, like, that's postmodernity. And then he came up with this cool phrase. He said, postmodernity is basically liquid modernity. Liquid modernity. And then he said this. In a liquid modern life, there are no permanent bonds. And any that we take up for a time must be tied loosely so that they can be untied again, as quickly and as effortlessly as possible when circumstances change, as they surely will in our liquid modern society over and over again. So what he's observing, right, is that in this, we've got this in our society, like we've got this whole push, right, towards individual freedom, right? It's like freedom from. And it's this push away from any sort of commitments, right? It's like, we're finally free. I have no commitments. Awesome. But it's what's happened in our push to be free is that we're kind of unmoored. There's nothing solid anymore. It's all liquid. And our rejection of any sort of external horizon means that all we're left with is our personal horizon. And when all you have is your personal horizon, and that's constantly moving, you experience vertigo. Ruth Haley Barton has this statement. She's this great Christian author. She says, in the instability of our age, we are constantly reassessing the self, our direction and purpose, our commitments and values. Without the constancy of stability, this assessment can create chaos. So it's kind of like in our lives, everything's up for grabs, right? It's like, should I stay in this job or get a new one? Should we put the kids in this school or should we find another one? Should I stay in this friendship or should I get a new one? Should I try this diet or should I try a different one? Should I try this program or should I try that one? Should I try this ballet school or should I try that ballet school? Should I try this church or should I try that church, right? It just affects everything we're doing. We're constantly just kind of going, what's best for me? And we're changing and chopping and changing, right? And we think it's called freedom, but as I said, it leaves us in vertigo because there's nothing solid. And it's exhausting, you know? I don't know if you find it exhausting. I find it exhausting. And it's like, is there any other way apart from this tossing and trying and doubting and buying and tossing and trying and doubting and buying and tossing and trying and doubting and buying? It's like, is there any other way? Is there a way to find a place where we could be like grounded, where we know deeply who we are, where we have a firm hope, a future? And is there any way that we could actually find peace and clarity and purpose and hope in a liquid age? In this liquid age, can we find those things? And we can find it, and not just like for you, but for us. Can we find that as a little community? Can we find a solid foundation? A solid hope, a solid way of an understanding of, hey, we're about this and we do this. Can we find those things? But before I answer that question, which I'll leave with you, but have you ever wondered why in our society we're experiencing this kind of vertigo? If you agree with me, you might not agree with what I've said, but if you agree with me, like, have you ever wondered why is it that we're experiencing this kind of vertigo, right? And I think it's interesting that, like, this common experience of vertigo, right, is that this sense of your inner horizon is kind of disappearing, right? So you think you're walking along and it's solid, but then suddenly it's like, it's not solid. So, woo, it's all moving, right? That's kind of the experience of vertigo, right? And that's your inner ear kind of flipping out. But it's interesting for us, right? We have for ourselves, our inner ears are kind of our hearts. So you know, in the way that the inner ear sort of gives you where your horizon is, our hearts kind of provide that for us. Our hearts tell us what's up and what's down, right? And the way that our heart does that is it asks four questions and seeks answers to these four questions, right? So these are the four questions, in case you're wondering. The first question is, who are we? That's the first question our hearts ask. Who am I? Is it for a heart? Who are we for a community? Second question is, why are we here? Third question is, how are we to live? And the fourth question is, what are we to do? If you don't have solid answers to those questions, you're at sea. You're completely at sea. Because you can do all the stuff, right? But if you don't actually have in your heart, like, on those questions, it's vertigo. Now, the interesting thing about our hearts, right, is that our hearts are desperate for answers to these questions, right? So they just go looking, just looking, looking everywhere for the answers to these questions. And they will take any sort of information. It's like a starving person will just eat any sort of food. They don't care if it's junk or not, right? So our hearts just answer these questions. They don't really care if it's good, true, and beautiful. They just take the answers, right? And the way that we answer those questions is through stories. So the heart never thinks in bullet points or propositional truths. The heart always works in stories, in memories, right? But the heart, as I said, will just pick up whatever's thrown at it and just go, oh, that'll do. I'll shove that into the answer box. Problem is, like, because it doesn't really discern what's true and good and beautiful, it just takes whatever, it can leave us in a little bit of trouble. Like, if you go to Central Asia, right, and you're walking along the street and you think, where's the post office? You can walk up to someone and you'll ask them, hey, where's the post office? And that person will just tell you where the post office is. Now, if you do that the first time, you go, this is wonderful, wonderful how helpful this person is, right? And you head off in the direction that they told you to go, and guess what you'll discover? The likelihood is that you won't get to the post office. Because in Central Asia, it's hugely shameful to not know the answer to a question. And so they'll just tell you anything. Now, you learn that over time. You won't. But that's how it is culturally, right? And our hearts are like that. Our hearts aren't going to go, gee, I don't know who I am. Our hearts are going to be like, what about this? What about this? It'll just give you an answer. It'll just rummage around for a story and go, psst. Now, it's all happening subconsciously, I get that, but I'm trying to bring that to the surface. But it's like trying to find directions in Central Asia. Your heart just kind of spits stuff at you. But the interesting thing is that our heart's answers to these questions, right? There's a quote before that slide. Okay, there's a quote about storytelling, which is kind of cool. So we have these stories that are really, this is the way our hearts speak. Hearts speak in the language of story, right? It's like everyone tells a story about themselves inside their own head, always, all the time. That story makes you what you are. We build ourselves out of that story. That's what we're doing all the time. We live out of stories. And you can say, if I ask you about anything, about who you are, you'll be like, you will have little things come to mind. There was that moment in the playground. There was that person that said this. I never settled down as a kid. We always moved. I was always the kid that had the experience, right? And that's how we form up our identity. It's no mystery, right? We just tell ourselves these stories, right? Because your heart's going, I need to answer these four questions. And I'm just going to work with the information I've got. And so that's great. That would be great if the information was good, true, and beautiful. But it's generally not. Our hearts have been formed from stuff that is a million miles away from God. Stories, places a million miles away from God. So what do we need? We need a better story. And you guys would know about stories. You know they grab them. You know I love them. Trevor Hart says, to be a Christian is in some sense to have one's own story shaped in a decisive way by being taken up into this other story of God's redemptive action in the world. That's what being a Christian is. It's actually changing stories. It's changing stories. And that's what immersing ourselves in the Exodus story does. It's kind of like this. See what she's got in her chest? She's got medals, right? You know what? She's in a parade, right? And she's holding the hand of, I assume, is her grandfather, right? And suddenly she's being immersed in a story, isn't she? It's like, oh, this is the Anzac story. And suddenly she's getting this sense of, oh, I'm more than just Peppa Pig. I've got a history. And then I've got a story with courage in it. Do you know that feeling? Do you know that feeling of being brought into a bigger story? And that relief that, oh, it's bigger than me. Do you know that feeling? That's the Exodus feeling. Because in Exodus, you get God shaping and speaking to his people. You get God telling his people, hey, this is who you are. You get God giving them a future, a calling. And you get God saying, hey, this is what you're to do, and this is how you're to live. But he's not doing it in bullet points. That's the point. It's story. Because we live in story. We live in life. Like, we're like, well, how does that touch down here? And then Exodus shows, well, this is what it means to kind of walk with God. This is what it feels like to feel God's love. God's love is always storied love. It's never propositional. It's always worked out over time. That's what God's love is. And that's what Exodus invites us into, to experience this storied love. So let me ask you, this is kind of how it works. Have you ever felt trapped under a weight or a burden too great for you? Anyone? Well, you need the God of Exodus, who freed slaves from slavery. Have you ever felt that your back was up against an impossible wall that you just couldn't get through? Then you need the God of Exodus, who delivered his people through the Red Sea. Have you ever felt like you're walking through the desert, just totally lost, not really sure where to go? Then you need the God of Exodus, who guided his people by cloud by the day, fire by the night. Have you ever felt like you're just hungry and thirsty for food that no human can provide? You need the God of Exodus, who brought water out of the rock and food from heaven. Have you ever felt like your life is listless, without purpose? Like you're all washed up and life has just completely passed you by? Ever felt like that? Maybe only old people have. Well, you need the God of Exodus then. God called Moses when he was a sprightly 80 to deliver a nation. So that was a good retirement plan, wasn't it? Hey, Mo, what's up? You tending the sheep? Come on, let's go deliver a nation. Okay. That's not what I had planned. My knees are getting... I don't care about your knees. Get on with it. We really need that story. We really need to be immersed in that story. The second reason flows from my first reason. The Exodus story is Jesus' story. So it's not only an incredible story, it's actually the foundational story of the Jewish people, right? The foundational story. It shaped how the Jewish people understood who they were, where they were going, how they were to live, and what they were to do. Like, it totally shaped them. And if you read the rest of the Bible, like it's impossible to understand the Jewish people without the Exodus story. Like, if you read the rest of the Bible, all the rest of the Bible is kind of reflection and commentary on the Exodus story, for the most part. You see it like in the Psalms, they're always talking about, and then he led us through and they're all just looking back on the Exodus story. I don't know if you've been to a new club or a new country or a new place, and you know when you're having one of those conversations, and people go, ah! And they're, yeah, man, I remember with Top Gun, right? The first time Top Gun came out, I hung out with these friends, and they're like, Maverick, you know, and I'm like, what? I'm just sitting there, I'm like, I have no idea what they're talking about. And I feel completely left out, because they've all seen the movie, and I haven't. And then I did see Top Gun, then I got really excited that I understood what they were talking about. But I felt completely left out. And it's a bit like that reading the Bible if you don't know the Exodus story. Like, they're just making all these, like these little side references, and they're quoting Exodus, and you're like, what do you mean? But when you know the Exodus story, you're like, oh, that's what he means. I'm part of the family now. I get this story. So the Exodus story is kind of like, it's the cult film that everyone in the family knows. It's the forming family moment. It's like you had to be there moment. And if you weren't, you feel left out. You learn the story, you join the family. So the important thing about this Exodus story also is that it was the foundational story for the Jewish people. It was also the foundational story for Jesus, because Jesus was Jewish. And so his identity, where he looked for his identity in terms of who he was, where he was going, how was he to live and what he was here to do, he looked to the Exodus story. And you can see him quoting Exodus. So if it was good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for us. That story shaped him. We want to be followers of Jesus, we need to know his story. Okay. Exodus is about like entering what Karl Barth called the strange other world of the Bible. Like it's like you just step into this story and it's like, really? God does frogs and gnats and where are we? Like is this Voltron? Like is this another planet? Does God really do this? This is the strange new world that God invites us into. And if you're new to faith or something, you step in and go, what is all this about? Why do these people believe that God actually works in the world? Why would they think that? Why would they think that God actually overthrows superpowers? Why would they think that? There's no basis for that. Oh no, you haven't read Exodus. Why would you think about God miraculously providing for you? Don't you know how the universe... No, you haven't read Exodus. You come into Exodus and go, oh, wow. Maybe there's a bigger story for me to live into. Because to be honest with you, what I'm really interested in for us at this time is I'm really interested in how God takes a community from being slaves to his people. I think we as a little community need to hear this story. I think we need to hear that when the chips are down, God had a plan. He had a plan. He knew what he was doing. He called, he delivered, he led. Through impossibility. It seems like he just delights in taking communities through impossibility. I think that's what he wants to do with us. But he invites us into that sort of faith. Final reason that I think Exodus is it's good to read Exodus. Read Exodus and it will leave you aching. What do I mean by that? It's good and true and beautiful, the story, but it's also achingly broken. If you read the end of the story and it's like Moses doesn't get into the temple, get into the tent, the people mess it up time and time again. It feels so flimsy and so broken, you know, and it should. Because the Exodus story, Moses towards the end of his life, he says, guys, God's shown me someone else is coming and it's going to be way better. There's another one coming. Hang in there. And so the Exodus story ultimately points us to Jesus. Okay, that's good. So what we're going to do is we're going to let God. My prayer for us over this time is that we let God really speak to us through this story. So here's what I want to challenge you to do. Any idea how many chapters there are in Exodus? No? Okay. There are 40 chapters. Any idea how long that would take to read in one sitting? 3 hours. 3 hours. But here's a suggestion. Don't do it in 3 hours. You will get bored by the temple bit and you'll be skimming and scrolling or whatever. But I would suggest, I really want you to try to read the story for yourself so that when we come together each week, you're kind of reflecting on what you've read during the week. You're like, oh, yeah, that's interesting that they're saying about that because I had questions about that. So I'd encourage you to grab a pen, a prayer and pen, and read Exodus for the next 40 days. So if you could do a chapter a day. I don't think that's the best way of reading it because it's kind of disjunct, you know, it's broken up. But if that's all you got, you should be able to do a chapter a day. Like, you can do it in the throne room if you'd like. Just saying, there's a way to find time to read a chapter a day. and go through with a pen and note down your questions. You're going to be frustrated at Exodus. You know, you're going to find stuff going, how dare God do that? Good question. Write that down. And you're going to be amazed. You go, oh, I really love that you did that. Write that down. Find yourself in the story. It doesn't, your heart is not changed through bullet points. Your heart is changed through story. But to do that, you're going to have to immerse yourself in the story. You're going to have to do the work. Does that make sense? So I'd invite you to do it. If we're doing it together, then next time you see Joe, you go, hey, Joe, hey, I saw that thing in Exodus 8:6. What did you think? And Joe will be like, yeah, mm-hmm. No, it's that kind of thing, right? It could actually become a talking point for us as a community as we explore this, because there is stuff, there's tension, but there's goodness in there, and I want us to kind of mine that together. So that's my first thing. The second thing is, in terms of application, that God, the God of Exodus, is actually here today. And what's interesting in Exodus is that you see the people, the little community of God, hit challenge after challenge after challenge, and they don't really know God very well at all, like at all. And then they cry out to God, and then God comes through for them, and then they name God, they give God a different name. Because they're like, oh, he's the God who does water. He's the God who's the banner over us. And they just give him these names through their experience of God in their lives. And so that's the way God wants to invite us to interact with him. Like all of us, I mean, you've got a shopping list of problems now, guaranteed. But what God wants to do is he wants us to move from looking at our shopping list and complaining about it to actually shifting and going, God, help here, help here, help here. And then he wants to show who he is to you when he comes through for you. That's what he wants to do. I'm telling myself that, I'm telling Cam that, but that's what he wants to do. He wants to come through for you so that you know him as the God who does clients. I don't know what it is. As the God who does visas, as the God who, like, he wants you to know him specifically in your problem as the God who meets you in that problem. That's what he wants to do. And that's part of being in this story.